This is the Oanda Podcast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, speaking to Oanda senior market analysts from around the world with all the latest business and market news. And today we speak to Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London and good morning to you, Ed.
Always a pleasure to be on.
Absolutely. And it's non-farm payroll day. So shall we start with that? The US economy adding just 49,000 jobs in January. Was that worse or better than expected?
You know, it was a disappointment. And also we had a very large downwardly revised December number from 140,000 jobs lost to 227. So I think it was just a pretty much a very downbeat employment report that just kind of cements that belief that we can easily justify this next round of stimulus. And there's probably going to be a strong case that the labor market recovery is going to take a lot longer. There's 10 million jobs that are still needing to be recovered. And also there's 4 million Americans that have been unemployed long term. So that, I think you're going to see that markets are just embracing the idea that the Biden administration is going to be able to deliver more stimulus. And we also had some rhetoric from some lawmakers that Republicans might even be able to make some agreements on infrastructure down the road. So I think there's a lot of optimism that, you know, the stimulus trade just got bolstered and it's probably going to keep things going higher for U.S. equities.
Yes, and as you said, the numbers 10 million short of where we stood around about a year ago before the pandemic really hit. The unemployment rate now at 6.3%. That is down 0.4 points from December. Is it in the United States a little bit like it is here? Because of the vaccination program, and obviously the UK has done pretty well so far with over 10 million, approaching now 11 million vaccinations achieved over the last few weeks. I know that the American program isn't going too badly in some states. So has that optimism crossed the Atlantic as well?
I think this week there was a turning point where we did see more vaccinations than cases of COVID, and there's a lot of optimism that now we've got the J&J vaccine is expected to kind of get the green light next month, and there's going to be, I think, that thesis that if everything goes as planned, that you're going to have a reopening of large parts of the country by September. And that's kind of what I think everyone is kind of trying to price in. And if that's the case, I think you're going to see that some Americans will have a regular summer. Many won't. But I think there's a lot of optimism that we're definitely on the other side, and things are getting a lot better. The deaths, those numbers are still, you know, over 3,000. I think, you know, because of some intense snow weather, we had a big spike in deaths yesterday. But if you take a look at new cases, that's been trending lower for throughout consistently the past month. So I think there's a lot of optimism that things are getting better. The concern, though, is you're starting to see some signs of reopening. New York is going to have indoor dining at a small capacity on Valentine's Day, so in just over a week. So we're anticipating that you're going to probably see a little bit of a spike up in cases. And that virus variant, I think it's hitting Europe a lot harder first, and it is in the U.S. It is spreading, and we're you know, just waiting to see exactly how bad that gets here. So I think there's still risk, short term risks, but overall the optimism is really has really improved, I think, and there's that hope that, you know, a few more tough months, but I think that we're getting to a position where a lot of the economy can start to reopen.
And did those jobs numbers have any effect on the dollar or indeed the markets?
Well, it's been interesting because I think since the start of the year, we've really seen a steady rebound with the U.S. dollar. And I think the disappointing non-farm payroll report really kind of just triggered a big move higher with the high beta currencies. The dollar was pretty much weaker across the board. And I think you're probably going to see that overall, you know, the U.S. dollar, the fundamentals, just because of the unprecedented fiscal and stimulus efforts that are likely to remain in place throughout the entire year, and because the Fed is going to be the last major central bank to raise rates, you're going to see the dollar kind of resume that role as a funding currency. So I think the short squeeze on those bearish bets might have run its course. I think we could still see one last push higher here for the dollar, but ultimately I think the consensus trade on Wall Street is that it is going to weaken throughout most of the year. So we'll see if a lot of those bearish bets have been unwound, and if that's the case, then typically you get the green light for further dollar pain. So it's starting to look like the dollar could be ready to resume its weakness.
Indeed. On this side of the pond, Ed, we had a fairly optimistic report from the Bank of England. The economy in the United Kingdom expected to shrink 4.2% in the first 3 months of 2021. Of course, that's down to lockdown restrictions. But because of the vaccination program that I mentioned, they believe that the economy will bounce back strongly this year and consumer confidence will return.
Very much so. I think the key takeaway was rapid rebound, and it's all because of that vaccination effort. I think you're seeing that the BOE, it's not every policy meeting that you see it really just provide a strong move across treasuries, but it really helped the treasury yield curve steepened, and I think that you're going to have a lot more optimism that reflation trade is going to be a global story. And the UK economy is looking fairly attractive, especially considering some of the struggles that you're seeing in the Eurozone. I think you're probably going to anticipate that, you know, the UK bond yields, you know, they were after the BOE decision, they rose across the board. The 10-year and 30-year rates also kind of approach those pre-pandemic levels. And I think that, you know, the other key takeaway was that negative interest rates, it seems like it's part of the arsenal, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. So it might be required during the next recession, which might be a non-COVID story. But it seems that the UK economy is poised for a much quicker rebound than anything that we're going to see out of the rest of Europe, and that's why I think you're going to have a lot more optimism for UK assets.
Now, this time last week, Ed, we were marveling at what had been happening with GameStop shares. But over the past week or so, we've seen the extraordinary rise and fall of this company. Shares coming under renewed pressure throughout the week. Fortunes earned and lost in a matter of days.
Very much so. I think the GameStop phenomenon, it really just, for me, it was something that provided yet another lesson for the retail trader. I think what we're seeing is that there's going to be a tremendous amount of scrutiny. You're going to see the SEC involved, and they're currently evaluating, you know, what needs to be addressed. And but overall, you have to be pleased with how the financial system held up. I think that GameStop, I think a lot of the troubles that happened was, you know, driven by Robinhood. They were not capitalized properly. They were unable to handle that type of flow. And that's why you saw the restrictions. And I think that really killed the momentum of that trade and started to unhinge that relentless rally that we saw. That skyrocketing move was not justified. I think that you knew that this was going to come to an end. And especially once those short covering, that short interest kind of fell from 140% to just closer to 40%. I think that's what kind of provided the clear signal that, you know, this mania was ending, and it was probably going to end quickly. And you're still seeing, though, there is a lot of retail traders that are trying to hold the line. You know, if you still stay on, if you're following Wall Street Bets, if you're following those same traders on TikTok, they're just trying to remain adamant about holding on to these positions. So I think you're going to see that it's going to be a rough lesson to learn, because I think that you're seeing, like, every day, like today at one point GameStop was up over 30%, and I think you're going to see that there's going to be a lot of dead cat bounces, but in the end the fundamentals will win out, and there's eventually, especially for a small cap stock, you're going to see the valuations will hold out. So I think that this type of frenzied trade is coming to an end. But I think it has brought on a new wave of traders. Millennials, they're the largest generation. They're going to probably still hold on to some positions, and I think you're going to see that a lot of them have bought silver coins, so you're going to see that they're going to remain looking for the next best thing, and that's why you're seeing that interest into silver, and it's also returning back to the cryptocurrencies.
And talking of cryptocurrencies, or is it a cryptocurrency? Dogecoin started off as a joke, then soared in value. And that was after inventor Elon Musk called it the people's crypto. But is it a crypto?
Yes. So Dogecoin, and this is what's so fascinating is that in the crypto community, for the most part, the institutional money, they're interested in Bitcoin and Ethereum, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash. Dogecoin, though, it just has that adorable dog on its currency logo, and it really provides no added value on the blockchain technology or just in general of how it is priced. But the interest and the support from Elon Musk really shows the power that he has with this new wave of traders. It's amazing, because when you take a look at what we've learned throughout this pandemic, is that the retail trader is a force to be reckoned with. I know, yes, there a lot of them are learning a hard lesson with GameStop, but when you take a look at what the retail trader has done throughout this pandemic, they were the ones that were betting on Tesla. They were the ones that sent the stock higher. Wall Street, all the analysts said, no, these valuations, too much froth, whatever. They just sound cases that, we can't justify the 700% rise. But the momentum behind this, it's relentless buying from these retail traders that has really kind of provided a big shift for Tesla. And it's those same retail traders that, they were part of the initial surge in Bitcoin. And then it collapsed, but then on this next rally up, after falling to close to 3,000, you've seen retail was a part of that rally, and also institutional interests. So I think that you're going to see that when Musk is excited about something, it's going to excite that retail trader. And Dogecoin, it jumped at one point over 70%. This is not this is something that you can't make that case that for those valuations for Dogecoin. And I think that you're going to see that it shows you the power of what, these small retail traders can do. I think it's because there's just thousands and thousands of them that are getting behind these moves. And it really is providing just a little bit of a shock that, you're getting all these big moves, and it's not because of what people are reading on the Bloomberg Terminal or Reuters or CNBC.com. No, they're getting it from Twitter. They're getting it from whether it's Facebook or YouTube or streaming shows. And this type of craziness is not going to go away anytime soon. So I think the Dogecoin is not going to end well. It's going to probably have a similar outcome that we've seen with GameStop or AMC, and I think that probably you're going to eventually see that interest kind of go back to the bread and butter cryptocurrencies, which is Bitcoin and Ethereum, which have been performing strongly and do have legitimate fundamentals that are supporting some of these moves.
And meantime, the rise and rise and rise of Apple looks set to continue. They are close to finalizing a deal with Hyundai Kia to manufacture an Apple-branded autonomous vehicle, and this is going to be at the Kia assembly plant in Georgia. So, I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take to manufacture this car, when this is going to start to be rolling them out, but this is quite a thing, isn't it?
Yes, it's and we have to remember, this is the second real attempt that Apple is having at an electric vehicle. About 5 years ago, they were all in. They were, you know, investing millions of dollars into developing their own EV. And guess what? They threw in the towel. It was just too tough. They did not have the right strategy. So it's obviously an important potential revenue stream that you're seeing them reconsider. And I think that there is strong optimism for the whole EV space, especially with the Biden administration, the direction that we're seeing cars are going. I think that, you know, the Wall Street Journal kind of highlighted that the Apple, you know, the plan is that if this gets the green light, 2024 is when we could start to see these Apple cars hit the showrooms. And I think that you're going to see that this is very going to be a difficult market to break into. I think right now Tesla has the big lead, and a lot of this success will depend on, can Apple kind of have breakthroughs on the battery front? And also you're going to see that the competition is not just Tesla. You've seen other manufacturers embrace this new environment of EV, and I think that you should not be surprised if you end up seeing Apple not just team up with Hyundai and Kia, but also possibly one other major manufacturer. So I think that there is a lot of interest in this story, because this is going to really, well, if Apple is successful, how much will this take away from Tesla? But right now, I think you basically have just, you know, you see that Tesla has a, you know, 3 years of production and of car sales that, you know, will just further cement their market share. So I think it's going to be an interesting story to see exactly how they go about it. But I think that EV is where you're going to see a lot of people want to try to get some of their portfolios allocated to. And I think everyone loves Apple. Apple is kind of in the U.S., a key holding for most American portfolios. It's going to be very close to important to watch to see that if this is deemed as successful. And I think that if they are unable to show strong breakthroughs or inclinations that people are going to be lining up to buy their cars, you know, are they just going to trade in their Teslas or what? I think this is going to be important for Apple stock, and I think investors are going to want to see exactly how much of their free cash is going to go to this.
And let's not play down the significance of the fact that the car is going to be built in the United States, and particularly in a state like Georgia, which will play well to those that want to bring jobs back, or those sorts of jobs back, to the good old US of A. And the other thing that I think is interesting is, you know, they're a tech giant, and I would imagine that they'll want to control the software and the hardware that goes into the vehicle. So that is a bit of a challenge, isn't it, to the usual car model brands?
Very much so. And I think, I mean, Apple has enough cash where they could easily buy one of these car manufacturers. If you also remember too, it was not too long ago that Tesla was actually having discussions with Apple, and Apple could have easily bought Tesla years ago. So I think that you're going to see that the car speculation trading is going to remain rabbit, and I think you're going to see that there's going to be some established manufacturer that is going to strongly benefit from partnering up with Apple. So I think you're going to see that overall, though, the car space is going to do, I think, nicely, and I think everyone is kind of focused on that as the next big thing. And automotive, you know, having robo taxis, that's going to be the future. And I think you're going to see, it's going to be a battle between, you know, Apple's technology versus Tesla's, and that's going to be a fun one to watch.
Okay, before we let you go, Ed, a quick preview to look ahead to the next few days and week. What stands out for you?
Well, for me, I think, you know, we've gotten through the employment report for in the U.S., and I think there's going to be a big amount of attention paid to the CPI release on Wednesday. Pricing pressures, there's going to be a reflation trade trigger. We're going to see a surge in prices. And I think that you're going to see a lot of Americans are going to look to see, at what point do we start to see that tick up? But I think that as far as, you know, inflation running hot, there's going to come a point that you're going to see that jump, but that's not going to derail the Fed. And I think a lot of that is because we have to remember what happened early in the pandemic. Prices collapsed, and then we had a sharp rebound. So, these next few months, you know, we could see eventually a spike higher. But remember, because in the summer we had that early part of the inflation trade start to form, you know, those prices are going to be elevated. So it's going to look like things are going to be muted. So I think pricing pressures are going to be a key one to follow. And I think that's going to really kickstart those tapering tantrum discussions again for policy watchers. But I think that in the end that prices, I think you're going to see mild pressure next week. And that would just kind of keep the consensus trade on stimulus and outlook for what the Fed and the Biden administration is going to be doing going forward. In addition to the CPI reading, there's going to be, I think, some key data on from Germany on Monday. We're going to have their industrial production data, which is supposed to show a little bit of a drop. So I think that's going to be closely watched. In addition to that, we're going to have the Chair Powell speak on Wednesday, which whenever Powell speaks, you know, markets are on edge. So I think that he's been very consistent. I would expect for him to kind of maintain that cautious stance. We'll see if he addresses the disappointing employment report. And if so, does that bring the Fed any closer to talking about possibly increasing their purchases? The sudden surge in Treasury yields, does this mean yield curve control talks could start to resume? So we'll see exactly what happens, but that's going to be a big one to watch. I think in the end, on as far as economic data goes, you can't ignore the UK GDP and industrial production data. Everyone wants that rapid, you know, rebound for the UK economy later next quarter, and we'll see exactly, you know, what's the baseline going to be. So I think everyone's going to be focused on those data points, and then obviously we have the Lunar New Year public holiday starting in Asia. China takes a break from the 11th through the 17th, so illiquid conditions could provide some choppy moves. So I think everyone's going to be a little bit careful as far as positioning throughout that time period. So, you could start to see some wild swings, but I think unless there's a strong driver behind it, you'll probably see some reversion to the means on some of those moves. Obviously COVID, it's still about COVID execution, vaccine progress and rollouts. I think the European situation has improved as far as new cases go. Virus variants are going to be the focal point. Obviously the global economic recovery is going to depend a lot on emerging markets. They've struggled with their vaccine rollouts. So we'll see exactly if they're finally able to kind of get the ship in the right direction there.
Ed, thanks very much for joining us today. Have a really good weekend, and we'll speak to you again same time next week.
Thank you so much.